The Gemara Sanhedrin on Daf Mem Ches discusses the question of Hazmana Milsahi or Hazmana Lav Milsahi. Hazmana means some form of preparation. And the question is, what exactly is the form of preparation that we're discussing in terms of whether it's something which is halachically significant or insignificant? Now, obviously, to the extent that this form of preparation lacks mamashos, it lacks concreteness and is more abstract or totally dependent on thought, the less likely it is to have halachic significance. The more concrete it is, the more likely it is to have halachic significance. So the question is, what exactly is the status of this hazmana? This is the subject of a machlokes. There's two deos in Tosfos back and forth, and it's also a machlokes between the Ramban and the Ran about what exactly, how concrete is this hazmana. Now, on the surface, the Gemara's paradigmatic case of hazmana is ha'orig Beged Lemis, somebody who weaves a cloth for a burial shroud for a deceased or departed person. So Arigo, weaving, is a fairly significant and concrete action. It's not simply thought, it's not simply thinking that the following cloth should be designated for the mace, nor is it merely Dibor, it's not simply saying or stating that a pre-existing cloth should be set aside for a mace, but rather it's an action. It's a concrete action, an act of weaving this cloth for the purposes of a mace. So on the surface, it would seem that this ariga is a very significant action and a very concrete action, and that the hazmana that we're discussing in the sugya is also a very concrete hazmana. On the other hand, one of the sources for the discussion about whether a hazmana is significant or insignificant is the discussion of Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa is brought down to Nachal Eson. It's a calf which already exists in the world, and one takes the calf aside and says this calf is going to be an Egla Arufa, and at that point it still does not become Asur. And then when one brings it down to the Nachal Eson, he moves it from place to place, so that already gives it a status of being Asura, gives it a status of being forbidden to derive benefit from, and that is the source. We say just like the Egla Rufa, once it's brought down to Nachal Eson, so it becomes Asur Banad, simply because of this preparation for making it into an Egla Rufa, so too anything else can become Asur Banad, at least something which is designated for the use of the departed, can become Asur Banad with merely a Hazmana alone. And clearly the hazmana of moving something from place to place is a much less concrete form of preparation than the hazmana of weaving a garment. So the Ran says from here perhaps that the hazmana does not need to be so concrete. The hazmana can be very insubstantial. So what emerges very interestingly is that there seem to be two distinct disputes that are teluyim, that are dependent upon one another. The first dispute is whether the hazmana needs to be concrete and needs to depend on some sort of an action, or whether the hazmana can be with speech or perhaps, but less likely, even thought alone. That's the first dispute. And the second dispute is what exactly is the definition of a concrete action. Do we say that bringing the Egla Rufa down to Nachal Eson is a concrete action, or do we say that no, that bringing the Egla Rufa to Nachal Eson is an inconcrete and an insubstantial action? And these machlokos are teluyos ubazu precisely for the following reason, because there is a whole range of in-between cases, of cases which seem to be on the borderline between concreteness and inconcreteness, and those Rishonim who advocate that Hazmana does not need a concrete action will be inclined, therefore, to classify that in-between range of cases as being inconcrete, as being lacking in action, in order to bring Rayos to their position from those cases. Those who say that Hazmana requires a concrete action will say the exact opposite. In order to defend themselves against those Rayos from things that are in the gray area between concreteness and inconcreteness, will be forced to define all of those things as being concrete, as being b'maisa, being with an action, in order that they shouldn't be challenged by what would seem to otherwise be a hazmana which has halachic significance despite being inconcrete. So these are the two machlokos. Number one, again, it's two ways back and forth in Tosfos. It's machlokos between the Ran and the Ramban. Number one is, Does hazmana require concrete action or not? Number two, what is the definition of concrete action? And that goes, you know, those two machlokas have an inversely proportional relationship to one another. There's a third machlokas that I want to mention very quickly also, and that is as follows. Everyone agrees that whether or not hazmana, preparation, works, whether it works or not, everyone agrees that hishtamshos, the use of an item for its intended purpose, as long as it doesn't belong to a certain group of exceptions like akrai, ba'alma, etc., that if an item is used, that it's if there's hishtamshos of the item together with some form of hazmana, under those circumstances, everyone agrees that the item is going to acquire its status. That's for sure considered concrete. It's not simply thought, it's not simply speech, it's not even simply an action which is disassociated from the ultimate use of that the item is being designated for, but it's rather preparation through speech plus the actual use of an item for its designated purpose. And that's called hishtamshos or tashmish. And everyone agrees, both Abaye and Rava, that hishtamshos is sufficient to give an object permanent status, permanent isser hanah, permanent kedusha, etc. This is the position of all of the Amoraim in the Gemara. However, there's a machlokas between the Ran and the Ramban, again, about what exactly is the definition of this hishtamshos. The Ramban maintains that a hishtamshos al tanai, that if, let's say, if the example that the Ramban gives is as follows, of a hishtamshos al tanai. The Gemara says that if you built a kever for a mace, and you added on one row of bricks, you built a kever for someone who is not a mace, and then you added on a row of bricks for the mace, and then you buried the mace there, and then you took the mace out. So the halacha is that it remains asr. That row of bricks that you placed there for the purposes of enhancing the kever for the mace, that row of bricks remains asr. And the Ramban asks, l'chora, why do we need to do the action of placing the bricks there? If we hold that hazmana is significant, then shouldn't it be sufficient to simply designate the bricks for the purposes of the kever? So the Ramban answers that ordinarily, it certainly would be sufficient to simply designate the bricks without doing the action of placing them on top of the kever. Ordinarily, that would be sufficient because, after all, ordinarily, hazmana does not require a concrete action. It's sufficient with speech alone. However, in this case, what the hazmana is coming to combat, what's operating against the hazmana, is the fact that when ultimately the mace was placed there, the mace was only placed there on condition, al-tanai, that it would shortly be removed. So therefore, because the mace was placed there only with intention of shortly removing it, so there is no issue anymore. It's not such a strong level of being designated for the purpose of a mace, and therefore it requires specifically an action to keep the isser on these stones. If not for the fact that there was an action, had there only been a dibur, then the fact that the hishtamshos was al-tanai would have not been sufficient to create an isser on these stones. This is the opinion of the Ramban, because the Ramban holds that it doesn't need a ma'isa at all. However, the Chidushi Haran argues. The Chidushi Haran says that the reason that you need to place the stones there is because every hazmana is only significant in a case when it's being done with an action. It's not sufficient if there's dibur. And the Ran is unhappy with the Ramban's solution for his kasha, because whereas the Ramban is happy to say that a ma'isa al-tanai, a hishtamshos al-tanai, is considered a valid ma'isa, the Ran says it's considered an invalid ma'isa. Only a hishtamshos, only a usage, which is intended to be permanent, can be considered a valid hishtamshos. If the usage is only intended as a transient usage, it cannot be considered a significant hishtamshos in order to create a status of isser on the chefta. So I want to just discuss three conceptual possibilities, and I want to make these three machlokos taloi in some of those possibilities. What exactly is the significance of hazmana? What exactly is the significance of hishtamshos? So one could argue that we're focusing entirely on the present. We're not focusing on the past, nor are we focusing on the future. We're focusing on the present. What is necessary in the present in order to create a status in this chefza. So on the one hand, one could say that all that's necessary is a gemirus das. All that's necessary really is that a person, the owner of a particular object, should make up in his mind that this object is designated for a certain purpose. In that case, that's sufficient. However, right, the outside observers don't really have any way of knowing what this person made up in his mind. So therefore, he requires an action of some degree of concreteness, either speech or a more significant action like weaving or placing the stones or bringing the Egla Rufa down. And that action is sufficient to reveal there's a significant Gemirus Das, that I'm designating this object for a particular purpose. That's one possibility. I think this possibility is unlikely, because if this were the case, then the person himself who designated the object wouldn't require these extra, you know, trappings of concreteness. He himself knows that he had a sufficient Gemirus Das, and he should be bound by that. We don't necessarily find that anywhere. So therefore, one might come to a second possibility and argue that the significance of Hazman, or the significance of Hishtamshus, is not simply a function of revealing that there's a sufficient Gilei Das, but rather that sometimes a Gilei Das needs to be expressed. If the Gilei Das is not expressed, it can have no impact. Thought is very, very abstract. Speech is more concrete. Action is even more concrete than speech. And therefore, perhaps the machlokas about whether Hazmana is significant or insignificant, as well as the machlokos about whether Hazmana requires an action or whether it's sufficient with speech, as well as the machlokas about the geder, the definition of action, whether it's a higher definition or a lower definition, whether it requires a more, you know, significant and concrete action, or whether it's sufficient even with a less concrete action, maybe simply a machlokas about what type of thing is necessary to change the status of an object. If you hold that, then that a status of an object can be changed very easily, so then one could understand why even dibur is enough, or why we're willing to adopt a very diffuse and liberal definition of what's considered a ma'aseh. And if you hold that the standard is much higher, that you need a much higher level of concreteness, then for sure you would require a ma'aseh, perhaps even a very narrowly defined ma'aseh, meaning a ma'aseh that's very significant, like weaving, and not an insignificant ma'aseh, like simply moving the calf from one place to another. But I think there's a third possibility which may work even better with the different pshatim that we just mentioned, and that is, it's a question of the interrelationship between the past, the present, and the future, and the degree to which man can influence or strengthen the ties and the connections between the present and the future. In other words, and one can bring a number of rayas to this from Rishonim, which we don't have time for now, but basically, the significance of Hazmana is that now this object is on a trajectory for being used for a particular usage. To the extent that we can view this trajectory as a foregone conclusion, as a fait accompli, to that extent the object acquires its status already in the present, even though it was never used for that purpose. Now, I think that this would explain why perhaps we adapt the more broad definitions of what could be significant. Meaning the ones who say that we require action, or that we have a very narrow definition of action, would hold that everything depends on the present, and to establish status in the present, without the assistance of an anticipated future, of a trajectory, of a fate, or of a destiny, requires a very significant level of action. However, if one is going to enable the future to participate and influence and color our vision of the present, that the destiny or the fate of a particular object is going to help define the object's status in the present, so then perhaps one simply needs to connect, to forge a connection to that anticipated future, and that connection can be forged with speech alone, perhaps even under some circumstances with thought alone. And then once the connection is forged, we don't require a very strong level of concreteness in the present, because the concreteness of what's going to happen, of what's anticipated to happen in the future, can already impact on the present. And that explains, if you look in Rashi says that Avodah Zarah, that Tashmishi Avodah Zarah, there's no such thing as Hazmana for these things. Because, says Rashi, we always assume that a person is going to retract, that he's not going to use these for their designated purpose, because after all, Avodah Zarah is prohibited for everybody. So therefore, says Rashi, because we can't anticipate, you know, this the ultimate future, this, we can't view this object as being on a trajectory of serving Avodah Zarah, because it's usur, and we always hope that until the last minute the person will not use it for that. Therefore, hazmana by Avodah Zarah specifically is negligible. It doesn't work at all, because one cannot forge a connection between the present and the future, given that the future is such frightening consequences. We prefer to look away from it. We can't let it impact on the present. I think that may also be pshat in the idea of al tanai. If a person has ishtamshus al tanai, this machlokas between the Ramban and the Ran, so essentially what it means is I'm using it in the present, but I'm not planning to use it that way in the future. So the Ramban says ishtamshus al tanai is significant, because for the Ramban, everything is dependent on the present, and as long as there's a concrete action in the present, that can answer the chafta. But for the Ran, who says that everything depends on the connection between the present and the future, so because my hishtamshus in the present is merely transient, I'm going to undo it, I'm not going to use it for this purpose in the future, therefore, because there's no connection to the future, there's no way to answer it. And that may also be the reason to explain why we adopt perhaps a more diffuse definition of Maisa, or why we say that even a Dibur would be sufficient according to those Rishonim who say that.